Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Welcome to Africa Link with me, Assumpta Latus. Ghana's President John Dramani Mahama gives his first State of Nation speech. Some Ghanaians ask, why did he make their lives difficult by raising fuel prices?
All along, we have heard in the previous administration that he was part of that, the economy was doing so well, we were increasing our foreign reserve and all those things. And so why has it become urgently necessary for us to increase fuel prices?
Plus, episode 5 of our radio novella focusing on corruption.
You're not seriously putting them forward. Why?
Oh, come on, Isaac.
Wake up to the real world. They are from my family.
But that's not getting ahead on merit. That's corruption.
So how did you get this job?
These are just two stories coming up in the next 25 minutes.
Top story.
In Ghana, President John Dramani Mahama says he is determined to move the country forward by targeting annual economic growth at 8% over the next 4 years. Ghana has been struggling to bolster its local currency, cedi, combat inflation and control budget deficits. Last year, it saw a deficit of 12.1%, nearly a double of a government target. In his State of the Nation address, which was boycotted by the main opposition, President Mahama has assured Ghanaians he would tackle the country's energy crisis, which includes skyrocketing fuel prices and an unreliable power network. Isaac Kalezi reports from Accra.
This was Ghana's President John Mahama's first State of the Nation address as the fourth president under the country's fourth republic. His address comes at a time when many Ghanaians are faced with high fuel prices and constant power outages due to deficit in power production as well as acute water supply. President Mahama says he is unhappy with the situation and assured the work on other thermal plants to produce power to reduce the deficit is ongoing.
What should be our success and rather augment available generation capacity has unfortunately been undermined by a number of unforeseen developments. Work on the West African gas pipeline is now planned for completion in April 2013, this year. While this will give us comfort from the current unpleasant load shedding, the system will still be fragile with a slim margin of redundancy.
The president was also not happy with the country's public sector huge wage bill, which helped to plunge the country into a deficit of 12.1% at the end of last year. One of the aims of a recent public sector pay reform was to boost performance.
While we remain committed to boosting the morale of public sector workers of Ghana whose incomes were low compared to their counterparts in the private sector, it is in that spirit that we undertook the salary rationalization with a view to enhancing fairness, productivity and motivation in that sector. We now face the challenge of ensuring that the effect of the public sector pay reform does not constitute an unsustainable burden on public finances and on our macroeconomic stability.
But did he paint a real picture of the problems of Ghanaians? And did he outline the right policies towards addressing them? Ghana's gender, children and social protection minister, Nana Oyelitha, and another ruling party lawmaker, Fritz Balfour, who were in parliament, gave the analysis of the content of the address.
What did he say? He said, the determination of the people. The people of Ghana have the wherewithal to resolve their problems very easily if they come together and they're determined and they pool their resources and they focus. And he's given us the roadmap and the framework for that.
He talked about how the poor is going to be cushioned and then expanding the cash transfers, and he articulated this very well. So I was very happy with what I heard.
The address was, however, marred by the boycotts of the minority lawmakers who are challenging the legitimacy of the president in court. They, however, had argued that the ruling government has failed to implement vigorous economic policies that can transform the fortunes of the nation. The minority lawmakers had stated that a recent analysis by economic experts about the country's fiscal deficit, coupled with recent negative Fitch rating, vindicates them that the economy is not on the right path.
Isaac Kalezi, differing views there on how to manage the Ghanaian economy. To find out how President Mahama's speech was received, Isaac has been talking to Ghanaians on the streets of Accra.
If you are spending almost 9 billion Ghana cedis on wages and salaries, whereby you are only getting about 21 billion Ghana cedis from both revenue and grants and loans, then it tells you that you are really in trouble, because apparently you spend everything on salaries. What about infrastructural development? What about, you know, certain basic necessities that you and I need? You know, so these are some of the issues we have to drastically look at. I personally think that we have to measure wages by productivity. Perhaps you are efficient than me, so you have to earn better than me. Or you can't pay every minister at the same level. Some ministers are better performers than others.
They were fine ideas, very brilliant presentation of what he intends to do. But I was expecting more of what is happening now and the pragmatic approach he was going to, you know, initiate in attacking them. For instance, we have energy crisis on our hands. We have fuel crisis. Now we also have so many issues that currently you would expect the president to give us how he and his cabinet are thinking about solving those problems. But I heard more of what he was going to do. Seriously, I had expected the president to today explain to us why we really needed to increase fuel prices or petroleum products very well, because all along we have heard in the previous administration that he was part of that, the economy was doing so well, we were increasing our foreign reserve and all those things. And so why has it become urgently necessary for us to increase fuel prices? And so for me, though he spoke some fine words, I didn't really get the explanation as I had expected, because the fuel increase is sudden, in spite of the fact that we have been told that the economy was doing well. He tried explaining the fact that our wage bill was ballooning, and I felt that with regards to the wage bill, this is the first time I heard the sitting president or the executive become honest and frank with the people regarding our wage bill.
In a way, I am impressed with his delivery because it was quite detailed, but then I'm just hoping that all that he has said, he will be able to deliver.
A sample of opinion on Ghanaian President John Dramani Mahama's State of the Nation Address.
Africa Link, because Africa is more than just a headline.
In Malawi, a strike by civil servants was marred by violence on Thursday when police started to fire tear gas to hundreds of school children marching and chanting anti-government slogans. More than 100,000 civil workers have been striking for the past week, demanding a 65% wage rise, saying the devaluation of the local currency, the kwacha, last year has caused significant price hikes. This comes as government pushes ahead with challenging economic reforms, which have the backing of International Monetary Fund, from which Malawi is receiving support. To find out how the government ended up in this dire situation, I turned to Desmond Dudwafiri, a Malawian economist in Blantyre.
Before the new president took over, it was already known that the devaluing the kwacha would cause trouble. So when the new president agreed to the devaluation, she was already aware that there would be this problem. So it is not quite a surprise that people on the whole didn't know how far the devaluation would go, and that's what has made them angry.
IMF says the devaluation of the kwacha seems to be stimulating the production of exports while restraining demand for imports. Does that mean the reforms are working, even though they are painful?
Yes. We had the visitors from the IMF here, and they collected data from our officials, and I think they have their own data as well. And they commented that the economy was moving in the right direction. So there's hope that perhaps in the next 18 months, the economy will show visible signs of turning around. We have made a pact with the international community, the financiers, and they will not continue assisting us unless we stick to the reforms. They have made very clear. They say these reforms are necessary, and it is on this basis that they are offering us financial assistance. Otherwise, we might lose the funding.
Joyce Banda became president just a year ago, and she was praised and held both locally and internationally. What does a week-long strike tell the world about her?
Well, it's definitely giving a bad shape because it does seem that she has not been able to convince the civil service to accept the sacrifices. But you see, it's not something peculiar to her. Even the previous president, since we had a multi-party system, we have had a civil service that has not been very compliant. So it's not peculiar to her regime at all. As soon as we got a multi-party system in 1994, there were strikes all over the country, and from time to time, we've had such situations. So they are not peculiar to her regime at all.
Desmond Dudwafiri in Blantyre. Let's go now to Kenya, where it looks as if a criminal organization is trying to subvert the rule of law in the run-up to March 4 elections. The country's Chief Justice, Willy Mutunga, has received a threatening letter from a group known as Mungiki, warning him of dire consequences if his office bars Uhuru Kenyatta, indicted by the International Criminal Court, from running. Mungiki from the Kikuyu ethnic group are seen as Kenya's mafia. I have been talking to the chairman of the Kenyan National Commission on Human Rights, Anne Ngugi, and asked her how dangerous was this threat to the independence of Kenya's judiciary as the country heads to the polls.
This threat must be taken with the seriousness it deserves, because any threat to anybody's life is a serious matter. It cannot be underestimated, it cannot be assumed, and it must be dealt with as what it is, a threat to the life of somebody, and hence would require immediate and intensive investigation to establish exactly the authors of this letter, and if possible, they can be traced, they are brought to book in terms of arrested and charged with criminal offences according to Kenyan law.
Do we know who is the driving force behind this group?
It is not known. And the simple reason for which it is not known, Mungiki is one, it is an outlaw group. It is via membership. That is, not everybody is a Mungiki. You must undergo a process to become one, which is in layman's understanding, either taking an oath or and participating in their activities. Our understanding, as the National Commission of Human Rights, is that there are quite a large number of them.
And how influential are the Mungiki in Kenya?
In terms of influential, I would not call them influential. Influential would imply that they're able to change and make people take a particular direction in terms of thought. They're able to actually make something happen. In terms of thought processes, in terms of, in this case, we are a democratic country, they don't influence that way. It is a fear. It is a fear that people have of the Mungiki group that is the bigger challenge. Because of the kind of their methodologies, and their methodologies here include, the way they undertake, for example, if at all they're going to undertake an assassination, if at all they're going to look for somebody and ensure that they deal with them and ensure that they do not have any further, that person has been dealt with and that problem has been addressed.
What is the government doing to tackle the problem?
The government of Kenya has very clearly said, in terms of illegal and outlawed groups, they will take the necessary actions to bring them before a court of law, and that court of law will then go ahead through the normal judicial, the criminal process, find that person guilty or not guilty of the charge of a charge, for example, of being a member of an outlawed or illegal group.
Anne Ngugi, chairman of the Kenyan National Commission on Human Rights.
Deutsche Welle, learning by ear. Listen up, shape your future. Welcome to Learning by Ear and the fifth episode of our radio drama on corruption, The Elephant in the Room. In the last episode, the members of parliament involved in the energy scam met to discuss the funding for the election campaign. They want to increase the amount of money they are making on fake energy contracts in a bid to get their man John Maina into State House. They assumed Alfayo Odhiambo would be happy to continue supplying the electricity meters they need to make this scam work, but he refused. He plans to blow the whistle on their dirty dealings, even if this means implicating himself. But John Maina is still front-runner in the presidential election. In fact, he even had the cheek to announce on national television that he has a zero-tolerance attitude to corruption. In this episode called Can They Stop Corruption Now?, the Odhiambo family's good friend Jeffrey Thiong'o has founded a new non-governmental organization to fight corruption. Let's join him at the press conference.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen of the press.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for your support and for coming along to the first press conference of our new organization, Stop Corruption Now. As you know, there is a lot that needs to be done to rid this country of corruption, but we are going to do our very best to make this happen. Yep. I think I'll start by answering your questions.
Mr. Thiong'o, yes. We heard that you were sacked from the Anti-Corruption Board. Mm-hmm. Can you explain why?
Oh, yes, I can. I discovered that many of the cases I was researching and putting forward for investigation would go straight to the bottom of the pile. Mm-hmm. Sometimes files would even go missing.
You mean they actually disappeared?
Yes, exactly. And then I came across a huge energy scam. I discovered that a number of companies had been created and that they'd been given energy contracts to supply the national electricity grid. Yet I couldn't physically get hold of any of these companies. In fact, they didn't seem to exist at all. Yet they'd been awarded contracts worth tens of thousands of dollars.
So why haven't we heard about this before?
It's because the chairman of the Anti-Corruption Board buried the case. When I asked for it to be looked into and reopened for investigation, he told me that my work wasn't good enough and he sacked me.
So you think the chairman of the board is also in on the scam?
Yes, I believe he is.
Who else do you think is involved?
I believe this goes right to the top of the energy ministry. Mm-hmm. There must be members of parliament involved in this scam or it will never have succeeded in the first place. And I think it's going to get even bigger with the elections coming up.
These are very serious accusations. Do you have any evidence to support your claims?
Mm. Of course I do. I have documentary proof of the evidence I've uncovered so far, and we'll be providing you with the copies at the end of the press conference.
Apart from this energy scam, are there more cases that your new NGO Stop Corruption Now plans to investigate and report on? Yeah.
Absolutely. We have the full support of the international community and of our international donors. In fact, we've even received financial support from them to pursue our investigations. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a very busy time for us, uncovering and exposing all the dirty dealings that go on in this country.
Mr. Thiong'o, We know you receive support from foreign donors, mm-hmm. but what could the people of this country do to stop corruption now?
First, we need some of the people involved in this energy scam to come forward. We need as many witnesses and as much evidence as possible to help us prosecute those responsible.
Why don't you run for parliament, Mr. Thiong'o?
I don't think I'm ready for that. Let's just take things one step at a time. Huh? Now, if you need more information, Sylvia here will be happy to give you copies of our latest reports. She'll also handle any interview requests. So thank you all for coming.
Thank you.
All right.
Well, Jeffrey, I think we've had a nice cup of coffee. That press conference went well, didn't it?
Yes, yes.
Most of the journalists seem to support us. I think we're going to get some good coverage, eh? Mm-hmm. And if we've got the press behind us, it will make life a whole lot easier.
Oh, yes, Sylvia. So far, so good. I actually think corruption is one thing the press are always keen to hear about.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually a good story for them. After all, nothing sells papers like sex and crime, eh?
Yes, I suppose. I never imagined this would take off so quickly. I feel a bit overwhelmed. We've got so much work to do.
We certainly do, Sylvia. But we also have a mission. So let's get to work. Let's stop corruption now.
Jeffrey, what about that last question? Running for parliament. Would you really consider it?
Where on earth did that question come from?
Mm-hmm.
It took me completely by surprise. It's not something I've ever really considered. Well, you know, never say never.
Mm-hmm.
But we've got far too much work at the moment with the new organization. So let's stay focused, Sylvia.
Fortunately, Jeffrey has the support of the press. They are not afraid to expose corrupt activities and to name the people involved. In many countries, this is one of the problems. If the media are controlled by the government, most journalists and editors are too scared to do their jobs properly and expose corruption because they fear for their lives and their livelihoods. Let's find out what's been happening to Isaac, the son of Odhiambo family. Isaac is studying law and he works part-time at a law firm.
So, Peter, here are the CVs we have to go through for the boss. Just so we are clear on this,
What we are looking for is a new associate lawyer, 10 years experience and all the usual qualifications. Then we'll look for any outstanding qualities. Those are the boss's instructions.
Sure, Isaac. That sounds pretty straightforward.
So in this pile here are the people who made it through my initial selection. We'll go through all the CVs in a minute and pick out the top 20 to invite for interview. This pile here are the ones who aren't up to scratch, so we need to send them letters of rejection.
Okay, cool.
Hey, Mary. Mm-hmm. We're going to have a lot of letters for you to type up this afternoon to the applicants for the new position. I'll bring them over to your desk later. Hey, Peter, what are you doing?
Calm down, Isaac. I'm just looking through your reject pile. You know, I really think we should invite a few of these guys for an interview.
But they don't even have the basic experience needed for the job. Look, this guy, for example, he only qualified 4 years ago. This other one you've picked out has huge gaps in his CV. It doesn't match up with what he's put in his covering letter. That's why they're in the reject pile.
Sorry, Isaac. I have to disagree. These two are top candidates for the job.
What? You're not seriously putting them forward. Why?
Oh, come on, Isaac. Wake up to the real world. They are from my family. If I can get them an interview, they'll help me out when I'm looking for my next job. That's how it works. That's how I got my job. Keep it in the family. You scratch my back and I'll scratch yours.
But that's not getting ahead on merit. That's corruption.
So how did you get this job? On merit? Got good grades then just got lucky with your application? Hmm? Doubt it.
I did get the grades actually. And, my dad's friend told me how I could apply for a job. But that's all. It's not as if he pulled any strings for me. I had good results.
Wake up, Isaac. You got here the same way these guys will get here. It's who you know that counts. And believe it or not, the system is not going to change anytime soon.
Well, as we've heard, it's ingrained attitudes like this that keep corruption going. Isaac is just a small cog in a very big machine. Is he strong enough to stand firm and stick to his principles? Does he really believe there can be such a thing as a zero-corruption society? With these questions, we've reached the end of the fifth episode of our radio drama on corruption, The Elephant in the Room, based on real-life stories. In the next episode, we'll find out what happens when Lydia Odhiambo confronts her teacher about her grades, and two members of the Odhiambo family take their cases to Jeffrey's new NGO, Stop Corruption Now. If you'd like to hear this program again, please visit our website at dw.de/LBE. You can also discuss or comment this episode on our Facebook page. Goodbye for now, and thanks for listening.
We are the future of Africa.
And education is our key to success.
Here in Africa, radio is the most important medium.
That's why the Deutsche Welle has developed a special program for young listeners called Learning by Ear.
With radio dramas and features written by African authors.
The topics are politics, health and social issues, the environment and economy.
Want to hear more? Tune in for our next program.
Or visit our website at dw.de/LBE. Learning by Ear.
We are the future of Africa.
And now a quick look at our headlines. Ghana's President John Dramani Mahama says he is determined to move the country forward by targeting annual economic growth at 8% over the next 4 years. Police in Malawi used tear gas to disperse school children marching and chanting anti-government slogans. And Kenya's Chief Justice receives a threatening letter warning of dire consequences if his office bars Uhuru Kenyatta from running for the presidency. That's it from this edition of Africa Link. If you wish to comment on what we have been covering, you can now send us a short text message using your mobile phone. The number is +491609575910. That is +491609575910. Or use our email address, which is feedback.africa@dw.de. Till tomorrow, I'm Assumpta Latus. Thanks for listening.